This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Last Thursday, the FBI took former Kansas City, Kansas detective Roger Golubsky into custody. He was charged with 6 counts of violating the civil rights of 2 women whom he sexually assaulted, but there was no criminal charges for the alleged assaults. Then on Friday, the Department of Justice filed a motion to keep Golubsky in jail until his trial, based on the accounts of 7 additional women who supplied detailed accounts of the multiple sexual assaults against them by the former detective. Here to explain the charges against Golubsky and the impact of the other 7 women who've come forward in this case is Stephen McAllister. He's a distinguished professor of law at the University of Kansas. He's also a former U.S. attorney for the District of Kansas. Stephen, nice to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You know, you focused heavily on Roger Golubsky during your years as U.S. attorney, Stephen. Can you tell us the steps you took to investigate him?
We really began in about 2019 when I asked the special agent in charge of the FBI field office in Kansas City if they had ever taken a look at him or if they would take a look at him. And we had a meeting. And he indicated that they had done some looking in the past, but it had not been pursued for reasons that are unclear. And so I asked him if they'd be willing to initiate a new investigation, which they did.
Why do you think this case has taken so long? Why has it taken so long to bring Roger Golubsky to justice here?
Well, I think, to be honest, most of the crimes essentially are state law crimes. So that's really on state and local authorities. And, you know, I can't really speak to why they did not do anything. One of their challenges is statute of limitations. So for most of the crimes, it'd be hard for them to reach back as many years as the federal government was able to do. But that's possible under the civil rights statute because his crimes involved serious bodily harm, the sexual assaults, the rapes, and we have no limitations period if you have death or serious bodily harm.
You know, Stephen, it's not lost on anybody here that we're talking about a former police officer here. Would that likely have played a factor here in why this case took so long?
Well, it could. And as I think I've said before, it's hard to believe others in the department didn't know some of what was going on. So, you know, whether there will be more indictments or more, you know, certainly FBI has said the investigation is ongoing. That's entirely possible. And his police officer status is critical to the federal charges because they are violations of civil rights by someone acting under color of law, which he was as an officer. So that's what turns it into a civil rights violation.
You know, Stephen, you told the Star the other day that you think KCK police officers who knew about Golubsky's activities but didn't stop them could wind up facing criminal charges themselves. Do I have that right?
I don't know if they'll face criminal charges for simply not stopping him. It's possible they could be aiders and abettors to crimes. You know, it's also possible that there were other officers who were engaged in similar or other unlawful activities with the department that just really wasn't paying attention or at least not willing to do something about it.
Could the entire KCK Police Department and maybe even the unified government of Wyandotte County, Stephen, could they be held accountable in some way here?
Unlikely, but possible. I mean, not under criminal statutes, probably under federal civil rights law on the civil side, if you could show that there was governmental policy or custom that allowed these things to happen, then possibly the entities could be on the hook as a matter of civil liability. And I think that may be part of the lawsuit that Cheryl Pilot has brought.
Right. You know, you mentioned that this case came to your attention in 2019. Do you recall what it was that brought it to your attention?
Well, I was aware of him, having seen the press reports, and I just remember there was a lot of controversy about the Lamont McIntyre case still ongoing, because he had not been compensated by the state, I think, at that point, for his unlawful incarceration, and just hearing a lot of sort of talk about Detective Golubsky. And so that's why I asked the FBI agent in charge, have you guys ever looked at him? And if not, are you willing to? And that's what got us started. And then we ran the investigation out of Topeka, given all of Golubsky's connections in Kansas City. I just didn't want the Kansas City office involved. So that's why he's actually indicted, in Topeka.
Was this a difficult investigation? Do you have any sense of that, Stephen?
It was. It's been extremely thorough from the beginning, but there were so many potential victims, but often hard to locate or deceased or unwilling to talk. There are various criminal liability theories that could be applied here. Civil rights violation is the one they charged. Early on in the investigation, I went to Washington to talk to the experts in the Civil Rights Division about the kinds of charges we might be able to bring, because the limitations period is definitely a concern. So much of this activity is going back 20 years or more.
So the statute of limitations, you're saying, was a big factor.
It was a big factor. And, ultimately, for the FBI to get to the point of charging, they had to find these two victims who I would assume they believe are very solid in terms of their stories as witnesses, and there must be some ability to perhaps corroborate some of the details of the stories. That was always a challenge when you're going back decades and people trying to remember dates and times and locations and anything at all that could corroborate a story. So it's more than this person says, and Galupski says, no, it didn't happen.
But in a case like this that's so old, what kind of evidence, what kind of proof would you need to bring a case forward? Because obviously, again, so many years have passed here.
Well, I think you need obviously very credible victims, and the more details and the stronger their recollections, the more credible they are. The one, as I understand it, it's abuse over at least a 4-year period. So that helps. It's not like a one-time event. And then you would be looking for things in the records that would indicate potentially where Galupski was at particular times that might corroborate his presence, or that he indeed showed up at a school, or he showed up here, or he showed up there. And so there may be other witnesses. For all I know, maybe there are some officers, former officers cooperating who have also corroborated some of this. That would be powerful evidence if you had a partner or somebody who said, yes, I was outside in the car and he went in. That would be powerful evidence.
I'm visiting with Stephen McAllister. He's a distinguished professor of law at KU and also a former U.S. attorney for the District of Kansas. I wanted to ask you about the charges themselves, Steve. When the grand jury indictment came out Thursday, there were six charges in it, three each for two different women. The charges, to be clear, weren't for the sexual acts he forced the women to engage in, but for depriving the women, I'm quoting here, of liberty without due process of law. Can you explain why there were no charges for the actual assaults themselves?
Because the federal criminal law is limited in jurisdiction. So federal government doesn't have general jurisdiction over all crimes the way the state does. So there is, for example, no general federal rape statute, federal sexual assault statute, even a federal murder statute. What instead we have is jurisdiction over certain situations the Constitution allows, including the violation of civil rights or constitutional rights. So when if he rapes or assaults a woman using his police authority, he is violating her right to bodily integrity, her liberty interest in that, and he's doing it under color of law. He's using his authority as a police officer. So that's what makes it a federal civil rights violation. But strictly speaking, there is no federal crime of, in general, of rape or sexual assault or even murder, only in very limited circumstances.
Also included in all but one of the charges was kidnapping and an attempt to commit kidnapping. Why would that be a significant in this case?
Well, that would also be a serious underlying charge. So that would be depriving someone of their liberty, literally, under the 14th Amendment. So, if he's taking them into custody against their will, that's the kidnapping charge, and that would be a deprivation of liberty, which would also be a civil rights violation.
Any sense, Steve, what possible sentence Roger Glubsky could be facing here if he's found guilty of all six of these charges?
I mean, it's up to life. And I would think that under these circumstances, if all the allegations are proven and the jury convicts, it's hard for me to imagine a judge being inclined towards leniency. And he's almost, as I understand it, almost 70. So probably any substantial sentence is effectively a life sentence. So a judge might not go as far as life, but I would think you'd be talking double digits at least in terms of years.
On Friday, the Justice Department filed a proffer to support its request that Galupski remain jailed while awaiting trial. This was, horrific reading, Steve. It revealed seven more women's accounts of being sexually and physically assaulted, as well as harassed, threatened, and stalked by the detective over decades. What is the strategy behind presenting these accounts to the court?
They're trying to keep him detained pre-trial. So the notion is to show, you basically either have to show a defendant is a flight risk or a danger to the community in order to get detention pre-trial. And so with that, they're obviously, I think, trying to show he remains a danger to the community. He's made all these threats over the years, allegedly to people. If we turn him loose, might he act on them? And so they're trying to prove that he's a danger to the community.
Well, that's Stephen McAllister again, a distinguished professor of law over at KU, a former U.S. attorney for Kansas. Stephen, sure appreciate you taking time to explain all this to us. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.